now recording.
All right. There we go. So, jumpstart meeting for the 17th. I think our one guest, Lucas Lindsay, just stepped out for a second. No other guests here today. Any modifications, Ron?
Yeah, just on item 8, I'm going to flip A and B, and we'll be branding after we do this sales and marketing plan discussion.
Okay.
I think I originally had it the other way around.
All right. And Lucas lost his opportunity for public. No, I'm kidding. Because he stepped out. We'll see if he's got anything he wants to interject later, but he's
yeah,
here.
Lucas is, yeah, he's going to make a presentation
right?
On number 7. He has a whole presentation to do.
I was just.
That's fine.
So, any amendments to the minutes? Any comments or corrections or anything?
Move approval.
Thank you, Dave. Is that a second? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Nothing else? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. It passed. And moving on to the lean business model, huh?
Yeah, I just wanted to go through real quick just the updates that were made since the last meeting. I've added on here in summary form the key resources. Obviously, I didn't list all of the different pieces of equipment. I think we'll get down to the nitty-gritty of those specifications as we get into cost and all of that, but just so you have a sense of what we're including under key resources, it's all there. Also updated target clients to take off some of the stuff we've decided wasn't going to be part of that. For example, on the development stage, there was an item after early market growth talking about, I believe it was IPO stage companies. All obviously we're not going to be in that. So that's just updated. And then the key partner sales plan, market plan is what we're working on today.
Okay.
Does anybody have any questions about where we're at?
Mm-hmm. Nobody else? All right.
Okay.
So, on to the key partner discussion.
This portion is really about what kind of partners are we going to need, and you know, what do we want to have, what should we have, that makes us efficient and effective. I mean, if we could obviously choose to do all of this ourselves and pay for all of it ourselves, but clearly that's going to be a difficult thing for us to accomplish. So we're going to need partners to make this thing work. And so what I gave you in the materials was a list of pretty much just repeating what was in the Lean Business Model Canvas in our objectives. And said who could potentially help us with these particular areas. So I've kind of repeated these, and if there's any, hopefully you had a chance to look at those, and I wasn't even going to go into great detail on each of these. These are things that we can consider. For example, Domi is here today, and he's got Lucas Lindsay is the executive director of Domi. He's going to give us a short presentation about Domi and who they are and what they do. But there are obviously other resources that we can tap into to provide some of the services, for example, like education. The Jim Rand School of Entrepreneurship, you know, they're just getting up and going, but I know there's going to be an opportunity at some point to do some sort of partnering there. I've already met with Susan DiRito. I think she's interested in making sure that we can provide some continuity of opportunities. If you have a student, you know, leaving the School of Entrepreneurship and has a company and needs a place to go, that there's some connection between what the school is doing and what we're doing. I have to believe there should be some opportunities for some of the education and the training that can overlap. Wendy, I don't know if you have any thoughts about that. Or
I know that one of the things the school is kind of focused on and worried about is the next step, right? So what do you do with these students that do start businesses and this is you need a handoff either if they're a technical type business.
So if we can create those connections between the school and the incubator, it should make for an easier transition for the students to go, oh, this resource is there.
Right, I don't have to go somewhere else.
Right. So I think the earlier and more often that we make those contacts between the school and the incubator, I think the better the long-term success is going to be for everybody. So there may be opportunities there.
Yeah, and one of the things the schools will be using, too, is a resource that, because the Institute, Jim Rand Institute, is obviously separate from the school, but mentors and advisors and stuff, we tap into them for students, and I would think it could be the same thing.
Yeah, now, the only thing the feedback I always get, and usually it's because I'm talking to Mike Campbell, and Mike makes it very clear.
We don't do startups.
You know that. So
that is one of his favorite thoughts.
Yes. So that may be something we have to overcome, and maybe it's a matter of clarifying in the gift agreement, what constitutes a startup and what kinds of overlap is there that maybe we can.
I guess what I was thinking more too, not their programs, the Institute programs, but the people in the Institute's programs as a pool of mentors or advisors.
Yes.
So as opposed to Mike coming in and doing it, it would be more, that's just a resource. A lot of times the people that are taking his programs have been there, done that, and like to come back. And
so not so much under the education piece, but more under the engagement piece.
Under the volunteer mentors.
Yes.
The education piece, that's a good point.
Now this may be a silly question, but I've heard Mike repeat this many times, you have an entrepreneurial school. I mean, that is kind of implying earlier stage. So there might be a different population with the students.
The school is
different, right.
Yeah.
So there may be different relationships there between the Institute and what can happen there and the school itself.
Yes,
is that right?
The school does do startups.
Right.
I mean, we are for...
I just wanted to make sure we're clear.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard right now because you're still forming everything.
But this is what we are.
At some point in the future, might there be opportunities for the school to provide some of the education and training components through some agreement with the incubator?
Yes, I would say, because we're looking into developing certificate-type programs and stuff, too. But we're also talking to Domi about aligning, some of our startup education for students, even with them, as opposed to the classroom classes. But there's definitely opportunities.
And again, I think when you look through all of these partner opportunities, I don't expect that we're going to today figure out all that exists and how it's all going to work. But what I wanted to do is find out, number one, are we overlooking any potential partnerships here based on your knowledge of what's in the community and even outside the community? And then give Lucas a chance to talk about what they're doing and consider how Domi and the incubator might work together. So does anyone...
This Career Source, I see training. I mean, they do training more of the workers, though, employees, not necessarily. I was just trying to think of who all the Aero partners are. Any other...
Yeah, and I think I listed Aero mainly as a network for other potential resources that they, for all the Aero members and what kind of resources they provide, which kind of runs across the board. But
one more general question. I think you've got a good summary of the resources that might be out there. There may be different programs that develop over time or have specifics. If we are seeking funding, we're going to get to this at the end, but we had a meeting with the EDA or others, formalizing that relationship, even if it's in the form of a letter between the Institute or the school or Domi or someone else, whether it's a real contractual relationship with someone who's providing services or just a formal relationship that we will partner on this, those types of things will help us anytime we talk to public or private sector partners for potential funding or apply for grants. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
formalized agreements.
So raise it, that was kind of half statement, half question. That's been my sense, but that would be right, yes? So from our own perspective...
Yeah, if you're going for grants and things like that, right, they want to see evidence of what you actually have in place. And those kind of things are good to have.
Okay. So it's probably too early to formalize that in some respects, but as we're working through this, thinking about who those, we could call it strategic partners, might be, that we want to start formalizing that and get a letter or a statement or something, that would probably be good, right?
Yes.
Collected as we
absolutely
go through.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing this, just lawyers, you know, anybody that's a faculty, staff, or student does have access to the College of Law, has an entrepreneur in residence that has a business law clinic, too, which is an awesome resource.
Richard Benham?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that, don't forget about that, because that's something a lot of
But again, that's limited to FSU students?
And staff and faculty.
Faculty and staff, too.
Does FAMU have similar type programs, or might this be an opportunity to talk to them about developing some of those types of programs in case anyone's attached to FAMU? Just to get those two categories of people, I mean, maybe the other community members, but it's just a thought that we might be interested. If there is a opportunity for FSU students or faculty that FAMU could make sure they match that, we might have a few others to provide.
Yeah, law school. I mean, we're lucky in that case for that particular.
They may have instance. Alumni. They may have others.
Right. They have to reach out to.
And I'm sure that, I mean, beyond FAMU, even, you know, if there are other community members who aren't affiliated with either university, they're going to need that kind of access as well. Mm-hmm. So I would envision that there's a pool of people who might be interested. I'm sure you probably have that, don't you, Lucas?
Legal.
People willing to donate some time or...
A couple,
yeah. I think that stuff sounds good. Does anyone have any other anything in particular in any of these areas or some other area that we missed at this point? I did update this. I don't think I included universities as funding sources on. I think that's a really important one not to forget. So that brings us to DOE. You want me to go ahead and show your video first?
Sure.
Deck. Oh, there you go.
And so we recently put together
as a key, I remember
video for the new year. So I'm going to kick off with that before we get.
I think I already introduced you while you were out of the room, but
My name is Lucas. I'm the executive director of the station.
Been there since the beginning.
Sorry?
You've been there since the beginning.
I have been there since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Originally as the...
Community manager.
Growing up and carrying around a briefcase with papers that were just mail papers, loose leaf papers from my notebook just to feel important as an entrepreneur. I had no idea as to what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to work for myself.
Entrepreneurship is hard, but it gets a lot easier when you're surrounded by people that inspire you, that help you, that push you forward. It gets a lot easier when you have a home. We want to share the story of what entrepreneurs are building every day on this field. I made a decision I wanted to become an entrepreneur my sophomore fall of college after working my 12-week internship in a cubicle on the phone from 8 to 5.
We didn't set out to be entrepreneurs. We set out actually to solve a problem, and it just sort of came natural to us.
Jump into the entrepreneurship journey, it's a challenge, and I love a challenge. She loves a challenge. She's been very supportive in that.
Tallahassee has a wonderful support community for entrepreneurship, and it's also developing as a nice little hub of information and technology businesses.
We chose Tallahassee to be a place to raise our family, so it was just natural for us.
I'm actually from Tallahassee, so I thought this would be a great place to come back to and
So I'm here because I'm a student, but since I've been here, I fell in love with the place. The resources here are great. The DOE station is great. On campus, you have endless amounts of resources that you couldn't pay for anywhere else.
Our experience as entrepreneurs in Tallahassee has put us into contact with a lot of great-minded people, phenomenal ideas, and the startup community here is really blossoming and has really been beneficial for us.
I thought I was going at it alone, you know, when I got here, and when you start reaching out to the community, you see everyone's trying to help you.
Being accepted to the Get Started program and having those resources available to us, I can't think of anywhere else that we could have done this and been as successful and had all of the help along the way.
Building the startup in Tallahassee has been a great experience. Going to DOE Station to going through different places on Florida State's campus, FAMU's campus, to get hope and receive a great amount of information to help me maneuver through my entrepreneurial journey.
There's a startup community growing here in Tallahassee. We want to invite you to be a part of it. Come down to an event, check out our website, come on by Domi Station. Come build the future with us.
You can really follow your dreams. I mean, it may work out, it may not work out, but at least try. That's what you have to do. You have to at least try.
Thanks, John.
Was.
Saw Lawrence in there. Didn't see Barbara.
Just back and forth.
So everyone you saw there that we did that video with was actually in our fall Get Started Incubator cohort. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of the programs that we run. Get Started being one of our flagship kind of entrepreneurship support program. But Domi, we are a startup incubator, a co-working space, 2.5 years old. Started, opened our doors June of 2014 with support from Leon County. We were in a county-owned building, public-private partnership. We worked closely with them, and then we had initial support from Florida State University as well to service the students and faculty. And then over time, we've attracted FAMU, TCC, and a variety of private partners like First Commerce Credit Union, law firms, accounting firms, business service organizations. And our whole goal is to build a startup community in Tallahassee, provide a home base where people can come together, access resources, and I think most importantly, access other entrepreneurs, other like-minded people, so they don't feel, like Nick was saying, like they're going at it alone. They can get connected to mentors, various curriculum-based, cohort-based programs that are vetted, that we bring in management consultants and people to deliver. But again, ultimately, a network of entrepreneurs that can help each other out. So it's an 8,000 square foot facility. That's kind of, you can see there, the main co-working space. Barbara's in there in the back. I believe Kristen's right there. So that was recently when we hosted then vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine. I don't almost forgot his name already.
Is that not funny? Sorry.
Not fun.
I thought it'd be funnier than that, yeah.
Yeah. I was going with you,
like
this, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're wrong, but we'll get to
this. Are just sad.
There we go. So, operationally, organizationally, Domi's 501c3 with a couple years under our belt, like I said. Recently, we've been going through a strategic plan process. We've tried to identify with our staff and our board, why do we exist? What are we? You know, over the first few years, we've done a lot of adapting and changing and figuring out what the community needs, trying to fill gaps, trying to achieve sustainability for ourselves. We feel like we have our feet under us now. We are really looking to the future, which is why we're finally engaging in this multi-year strategic plan process, which I'm really excited about. So we've identified our MVP. You know, in startups, we talk a lot about MVPs. So for us, that means mission, vision, and purpose. So you know, we're laser focused on educating and empowering entrepreneurs. We have a vision to develop a diverse, inclusive startup community, and we do that through partnerships with Florida State, FAMU, organizations all across town. But we think that there's a real opportunity to empower a community of entrepreneurs that's well represented by women, minorities, multiple income groups, people with different backgrounds and experiences. We think we can lead on that. It would be very cool if the community that leads on that is in the Southeast and kind of breaks that stereotype of the South that's important to us. And then why we want to provide a place where people can access resources and build wealth for their community. And that means a little something different to everyone, but we want to work with them to do that. Our staff, full-time, three people full-time. We have a couple of part-time folks, and then we bring in strategically different contractors to execute programs here and there as well. So I'm the executive director. Sabrina runs kind of the hub, the facility, the day-to-day of Domi, director of communities, a lot of our events, our co-working space. Dominic is operations and delivers Get Started, our main incubator program. These are the original four founders who came together with partners like Florida State and Leon County a couple years ago. I would say, three, 4 years ago at this point when they initially reached out.
2014 when we started it, yeah.
Right. All four of them serve on our board now. They're four members of our 9-member board. And I would say, they're very much engaged. Our board is a working board in many ways. I I meet regularly with many of them, and they are always sending me emails and questions, so they're always chiming in. But it's based on the support of a lot of people, so whether it's the board members or whether it's other organizations in town, DOMI exists because lots of organizations have come together to make it happen, such as, I said, Leon County, Florida State, and then we've attracted other partners over time. So many people on the private side will provide in-kind services that help us lower our costs or help us provide low or no-cost services like legal and accounting to entrepreneurs that are inside of our programs. Others will provide cash, sponsorship, and support because they believe in the mission or they're interested in directly funding a program. An example of that would be First Commerce Credit Union, and I'll talk a little bit more about the program that they supported. Again, doing some strategic planning, some of the things that are on our radar, we really want to become a more regional leader, have a regional presence. We think that all across Panhandle, South Georgia, South Alabama, all the area that we can be a resource to entrepreneurs. Even our fall cohort had one lady that would Skype in from Atlanta, so we're starting to attract some companies. I think in the spring we may have another Atlanta company. There's people that are interested from all across the region in participating. So that's the same thing for mentors and resources that we want to offer. We want to start leveraging more national and regional networks.
Lucas, what's the attraction for someone from Atlanta to want to participate here, given all that Atlanta has to offer in there?
I think, at this point, it's been a relationship-based, right? So they, in that case, they felt like they just knew and trusted the people down here. They have an existing relationship to Tallahassee. They moved away in that case, and for whatever reason, retained that connection to home, but they don't necessarily live here. There are some programs up there, but it is, people will tell you, some entrepreneurs will tell you it's hard to raise money in Atlanta because it's so noisy. It's hard to get an audience with investors and some places like Techstars, you know, they only take 10, 12 companies a year. They take the very best. People who already have $100,000 a month in revenue, you know, they don't necessarily fit that bill. So some people, I think, feel like they fall through the cracks of that community. Yeah.
That's a nice initiative, though.
Yeah,
to give them a different opportunity.
Atlanta's kind of an extreme case, too, but I think that for example, there's a lot of folks in Panama City. We've identified as a place that's kind of up and coming. They have a lot of engineering talent because of federal government, like Air Force and things. A lot of people working at night on hardware, robotics stuff. I'm sure Lawrence has seen some of that in his travels. But they don't necessarily even have as mature of a support ecosystem as we have. They view us like we're the regional leader, and I think that we can start kind of acting like it and reaching out more. So I want to do that. We want to increase support for minority and disadvantaged populations. I spoke about that, really focused on having an inclusive community. We try to take an ecosystem-wide view of what we're doing, so we're always looking at new programs, new opportunities, and trying to fill gaps the same way I think you guys are in the tech transfer and commercialization space. And then we do quite a bit of promotional kinds of marketing, storytelling. We want to do even more of that over time. I think it's really important for us to, again, get our name out across the region. We deliver our services through, I forgot to update this, but there's three main programs. At DOMI Station, the first is our flagship one, like I said, Get Started. So it is competitive, application-based, and we accept a cohort of companies at this point twice a year in the fall and the spring. It's a six-month total process, but the first half of those 6 months are spent in a weekly facilitated classroom environment. So we have a management consultant, Dominic, who spent time at Booz Allen and, you know, has had some of his own startup experience. He leads a weekly class. We licensed a curriculum out of Chattanooga called Co-Starters, a really well-established, well-regarded program that's in about 70 communities. If you know anything about Chattanooga, they've really ignited their local entrepreneur ecosystem, and the Co-Starters program has been a big part of that, so we're happy to have that here in Tallahassee.
Is there a fee for this?
So there's no fee to students and faculty that are accepted because of the university support. Community folks pay a fee of $400 for the cohort, and it comes with set of resources that far and away exceed that in terms of value, including mentorship hours with legal, accounting, those sorts of things. That are quick. They get 6 months of space access to Domi. It's essentially subsidized through our private and university partners that fund that program. And then we have PowerUp, which is new for us, something we're experimenting with this year. This is for existing small businesses who have their feet under them. And in fact, to qualify, they had to have a minimum of $250,000 a year in revenue. We accepted 5 companies. They're going to spend the year working with 2 management consultants. One's Dominic, another is a gentleman named John Breed, who was at Florida State. As I don't know if he's at IR or just at the business school.
He's an entrepreneurship faculty.
Yeah. Has had a small business that he grew and has had that experience himself. So we're excited about that. First Commerce stepped up to fund that program for the year. And again, it's kind of a pilot program for us. We're going to see how that goes. But the idea is that these are all companies who, like I said, have had success in the past, but have expressed an interest in entering some kind of growth phase, or perhaps are offering a new product to existing client base, or in the case of something like a Nextogery, trying to imagine what does the next generation of that business mm-hmm. look like. You know, yes, successful and established, been around for, 50, 60 years, institution in this community, but they are interested in trying to figure out how do I access a younger clientele, a millennial age goer who shops online, who is very experience-based, how do we get access to that? So we think this is a cool opportunity to grow a program.
How is this different than what JMI does?
How is it different than what JMI does? So you're the small business executive.
The outreach program.
I would say, first of all, it's the whole year. It's very intensive. Like, we do on-site visitation to their program, and they also come for the cohorts, so they're in the cohort together. So I think, through length and amount of time spent with them, it's very hands-on. It's very intimate, looking at their P&Ls and into their numbers, and the level of intensity seems different than the weekly class. How long is the small business executive?
I think it's 6 months, and they're you have to have at least a minimum of 3 employees and been around at least.
Yeah.
The criteria are a little bit different, but But then after that, they follow up with the peer-to-peer groups, which get more intense, but those are ongoing.
Yeah.
These graduates could also be in a peer-to-peer group.
So when did this class start?
Well, it starts on the 31st.
Of January?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because Florida Aviation Center is one of my tenants. My manager used to be one of my employees. Florida Aviation Center.
I met them at Leon Works.
At Lacey and Faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got a good range of new businesses, old businesses with Nick.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be an interesting conversation among these 5. That's
why we wanted to recruit a diverse mm-hmm. group of companies. They're all hand recruited very heavily, so it took a lot of outreach. For us, it's an experiment too, and seeing if this is going to be a value, so we'll see. But and then a program that's been around for a little over a year now, Technology Commercialization Accelerator Program, which is probably of primary interest to your guys' goals and audience. That's a 7-week cohort-based program, again, but it's focused on research faculty and research teams who want to assess the viability of an idea that they'd like to take or commercialize or research that they've been working on. That is delivered in partnership with Florida Institute. So Lawrence is the primary instructor right now in that program. And we're trying to wrap Domi's resources around it to create a pipeline. So after someone graduates, how do we then find and recruit entrepreneur leads to take this research and run with it? Did they then run through a get started style program? And how do we create a continuum pipeline? So this is in your guys' world, I would say it's NSF iCorp, but very light. It's modeled, though, with the same kind of methodology. And strategically, it's positioned to try and get us toward that proof of concept center the EDA and those sorts of large federal grants look for. So we recognize there was this gap, and we wanted to help jumpstart that in whatever way possible. Florida State initially, and then more recently FAMU has stepped up to fund that initial program.
So the intent of this program is not to train researchers as entrepreneurs. It is, in my understanding, it is to train researchers to understand what technology has to have in order to be commercialized, or something to that effect.
That's, you're right.
Okay. That is correct. That's nor is it the intent of the university to train the researchers to become an executive usually. So, and they're in fact pretty sensitive to that usually.
Right, right.
So, and I would say the researcher benefits in multiple ways. One, the research gets closer to commercialization, gets become more attractive to an entrepreneurial lead. It's easier to recruit them after they've gone through a program like this. And two, the researcher, I think, can begin to pivot even some of their research to make their research more valuable, even attract more research dollars. So I think that there are multiple outcomes or positive benefits, and perhaps multiple ways to measure success. If not just commercialization, then to the faculty pivot their research and get a big grant, that's a win for Florida State or FAMU as well. So,
so with this, dovetailing with the conversation that we've had about both universities, the culture is changing in Tallahassee, Leon in general, building this ecosystem, but within the universities, folks knowing that this is a pipeline, this is, I would assume that's why you're interested in this program. It's changing that culture inside the university as well. So if we've got a pipeline, I'm just going because you're nodding at me. Yes. So creating this pipeline, and we've already got a high demand we've seen in the last 6 to 8 months. Do you all think that this is going to help increase that demand coming out of various departments through the universities having this kind of initial training and kind of opening their eyes to what's possible? Is that the hope? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Okay.
It's hard to imagine, what's going to happen, but really this is about, for a researcher's perspective, diversifying potential funding streams. Mm-hmm. And anything you can do there, if they have something that may be called low-hanging fruit that might be commercializable, this would be a very good way of starting that process.
So the way I see this is we have two problems. One is the supply side, which is how do we get a good supply of commercializable technology? And this program helps, in my mind, helps the supply side, which is to have that. But maybe that's not a good analogy. But the other side of that is the demand from potential entrepreneurs who are looking for technologies to commercialize. And then once they see that and grab it, do they have an incubator to go to that can help them get it to the next level and be a successful business? So this program is not about trying to convert researchers into entrepreneurs. It's getting more commercializable technologies coming out of universities.
Yeah, get things closer to license.
Yes.
Right. And then also potentially make some of the research more valuable as well over time.
So we really have to address both sides of this, which is the other side is how do we create more entrepreneurs, which is what the Jim Moran School hopefully is doing through that formal training. But then we also have a whole community of folks that maybe aren't involved in the universities who are interested in taking technologies and running with them. So,
and from my perspective too, the people that go through this program are usually more life science, hard science, engineering centric. That's been the way we've recruited it. So they don't necessarily have, which one I've decided that Jumpstart is going to exist, they don't necessarily have a physical space to engage in that work for commercialization, because don't need space is more of an IT type of space. It's apps, it's software, services that people can do on a laptop sitting at a desk. There is no wet lab space or anything there, so they certainly have that need. And then Lawrence, there's been two cohorts, right? And then I actually don't remember the number in each cohort, but the last one had 7 or 8.
The last one had 8 teams. 7 of them completed the course.
Right.
The first one had 5 teams, I think, and 3 or 4 of them completed the course.
Right. So we're just training upward on that one.
And we're trying to spin up another one this spring.
Yep.
To get it going.
And the participants in this, you have a lead researcher, a grad student,
So there's usually at least a team of two. Lead researcher and then whatever, I guess they define as their research team.
Yeah, normally in the I-Corps you have a mentor also, but we don't, for this light class that we're doing, we don't really need to have them have a mentor for the class.
Although if we wanted to add to it, we do have a bullpen of mentors, and I think with partnerships with Division Park, and the researchers you have access to, and we could add that over time. Yeah. In terms of partnership, I'm always trying to figure out how can we do more with less resources. If we share a mission, and we can share resources, then we can do more together than we can do apart. So I think we're well positioned to support the mission of Jumpstart with programming like TCAP. If you have feedback on that kind of program, I'm happy to hear it. If you think you have needs that are unmet by a program like that, I'm happy to hear it because I want to understand your guys' needs. It's not just about coming to push or sell something here. But these are things that we're actively doing, and to the extent that we can get economy of scale out of it together, I think that that's important for the community, especially when with limited resources. We active 501c3, we have board, we have oversight, finance committee, you know, we're stood up and mature in that sense, so we give you that confidence. If any of you know Ime Hutt, who's an entrepreneur in town, always barreling down asking me about finances, so you are well served in that regard. We have full-time staff. We have staff that are ready to go, people who've expressed interest in working with us, you know, so as we grow, there's people there and we're ready. Over the last few years, our revenue is diversified. The people we've worked with is diversified, so we are starting to get our feet under us in that sense. Really excited about that. And so we, FAMU and Florida State are now equal partners in backing Domi. So between FAMU, Florida State, and our monthly co-working revenue, that accounts for sort of two-thirds of our overall budget. And then we engage with private funders. We are, at our next board meeting, launching into a small private fundraise where the board's going to go out. I hope to add more private funding there and diversify that. Has been growing over time. Really excited about it. And over time, we're looking at doing other new revenue-generating opportunities as well. So we have some new programs potentially on the horizon. We're assessing the feasibility of some of those, trying to diversify and add long-term sustainability to our program. And then we're growing our network, like I said, regionally, statewide, nationwide. I would like to have mentors and industry experts available at the ready that are not just from Tallahassee or not just from Pensacola or Orlando, but are even from the Midwest or elsewhere. Because there are people out there like that who are interested in supporting entrepreneurs, I think, especially through university alumni groups and things. We have the opportunity to build that. And then, like I said, growing revenue, and then we're looking at some ways to be a conduit for financing for companies, whether that is risk capital, debt, through financial institution partners, or grants of small size for people that complete programs. Over time, we'd like to add that capability to our programs. So, just a sense of where we're headed. And that's it. So that's what we are, what we do. Like I said, I think Get Started and TCAP are primarily sort of aligned with the types of entrepreneurs you'd be working with, would be hungry for a structured program like that with a set of mentors. Our Get Started, we typically tend to do at Domi, but I believe the TCAP can be done in other facilities as well as necessary. So, to be clear, there are things like a TCAP. It is not that we have a long-term interest in necessarily owning that. It doesn't have to be Domi's program long-term, right? It could be a jointly executed program. We initially got it started because we saw a gap for it. And it's kind of short and simple. The people on our board had an interest in commercialization. Some of our initial staff, that was their background. And they wanted to pursue that. They wanted to line us up, the community up, for long-term grants like the EDA. They're entrepreneurs, so they just want to get started and do it. But it is not necessarily true that Domi needs to be the one that owns a technology commercialization program long term. It could be a more partnership based program.
Lucas, share with us your most prideful moment that you had with the program.
My most prideful moment?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not winning the ping pong championship.
He won the ping pong championship.
Oh, yeah. You have a great ping pong.
That's cool. So there's a student that went through Get Started U recently. We have a lighter version of Get Started for students. That's how we sort of onboard them. And it prepares them to apply for Get Started over the 6 month time period. And there's a Florida State student who's graduating in May named JR. He has a drone photography company. But he went through Get Started U and I taught it. And 6 months later, he came to me and told me that the company's doing all right, moving along, has a little bit of revenue. But more importantly, he identified that he wanted to get his MBA at Florida State, that he's really fallen in love with Tallahassee, wants to try and stay in Tallahassee. And he was going out to lunch with me and asking me to do the letter of recommendation for MBA and all that, which is one thing that's cool, yeah. But he asked me, what could I do to give back to the community? I feel like the city, the community, startup community, has given me so much for free. Now, the university paid for it, so that's why. But he felt like he's been on the receiving end. He even said, all I've done is take, and receive things. What can I do to give back? So now he's the, I empowered him. I said, we need to get a startup grant, this event series. We need startup grant to exist again. Why don't you run with that or be the organizer? And he did. And he followed up and kind of contacted the people in Silicon Valley and got the license to it. And now he's running with it. And I think that it's just seeing how his interest in giving back, and he's so young, I don't think anyone would have expected him to have that attitude. Seeing that there's a community of people that are even teaching people to be that responsible and selfless, I think that's really cool. So there's been some company successes, mm-hmm. Sure. Companies that have grown, achieved revenue or investment or whatever, but I think I'm most happy. Prideful about the personal stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That culture is being built, if that makes sense. And trying to figure out how do we sustain that, scale that.
And that, interestingly enough, that was something that was talked about heavily in Boulder, in the Boulder trip that we went on, and the startup community there talked about the need for entrepreneurs to, what was it, give first?
Yeah, give first.
Give first.
Right, exactly. Provide value first. Yeah. Ask for stuff later.
but giving back, I think, was a big part of it. And then also the importance of having the private sector leading the whole entrepreneurial, the building of the entrepreneurial ecosystem. And I think the public sector folks like us can do a lot to help support it in the long run, it's going to take
sure.
The private sector, though.
Yeah, great book, Startup Communities by Brad Feld. If you want to check out that whole mentality, the give first mentality.
So you would envision, for example, if you wanted to offer the Get Started or the Co-Starters program, if we wanted to do a cohort specifically of Jumpstart folks, would that make sense to do that?
So if I were designing it, I would probably say that it doesn't make sense to initially have it exclusively Jumpstart because you might not have that pent-up demand for 7-8 people right at first. But it would make sense to heavily market it and maybe like reserve spots for Jumpstart folks, and that there's you can initially seed that class with 3 or 4 people. Yeah. If there's enough people.
Yeah.
That makes sense, but there are some people, too, that went through TCAP, like Lawrence could tell you, that are even outside of the university. I mean, there was person whose technology is not affiliated with the university.
And then Eunice Kofi was one.
Yeah, Eunice Kofi
with her company.
Separate solely from the community. So I guess what I'm saying is there's demand from people outside of that realm too, so I wouldn't want to necessarily. So the, unless we, you know, you could have, we could have routed Eunice to a different program if we decided she wasn't.
Are you having any problems filling that class?
TCAP?
No, the Get Started program.
No.
No?
No. So our fall program had 35 applications, and we took 12 teams, and one of them dropped out the first week.
And would you have taken more of those teams if you had spots for them?
Well, like if I had the capacity to. So the cohort maxes out at around 18, 20 people just for sort of best practices with that kind of classroom environment. If we could dual track it where we had multiple maybe facilitators, that's possible. But that's a whole other body and a whole other either a stipend or salary. So, Get Started is sort of maxed right now. We could potentially add a third cohort through the summer based on summer demand, but I don't know how that will be. TCAP, it's not the same sort of number of applications versus
Right. Events,
but I don't know how many applications we had for the fall.
Do you do any other education?
It's also less heavily marketed.
We did it. We had 8 applications.
Right, and we took 8 people.
And we had 8 teams.
Right, but it is not marketed to the level it started at all.
Right.
We would rely a lot on, and we do, on our university partners to help us market because they have those listservs.
I'm just wondering if we start to get clients in that need to go through a more formal program like that, or maybe that's a condition of their.
Like a Get Started.
Yeah, Get Started. Yeah, if we want them to come into the incubator, but a requirement is that even while they're in there, they have to go through that program. And would it make sense to have it, have one at your place and one at our place, and if they're a resident of our place? So those are just considerations to think about. I don't know that we're going to answer all that, but go ahead.
Well, I'll take that from a slightly different angle and ask all of you, based on the staff and how you all have developed, fast forward a year or so, Mary Jo's going to say more, but we have a incubator set up out here. We're going to have some staff member, at least on property, if not in the building, mm-hmm. that's helping to facilitate maybe the operations of that facility and helping to connect people with mentors or whatever it might be.
Sure.
I guess... So you're saying, sure, in that sense, it seems like either requiring people to have gone through a cohort already with Domi or immediately start a program like that, like TCAP, within this facility in the first couple months of their residency in this facility, that's kind of where you're going.
Yeah.
But if we had staff on site, could that person facilitate working with other existing programs, getting the person in the right place? I mean, I guess I'm just trying to imagine this. Would that person be hired? Would that be all under a contract? These are all things that can be worked out, but I'm just curious what our options are. Would that person be hired under Domi and have a real clear, relationship or Domi or a group like that? Or would we have that person in just an agreement to work on programs? I don't know. We have all these options. Is that right? Am I thinking through this?
So you would have like a facility manager, community manager type for the incubator or jumpstart, right?
Could they deliver the program? Like that person could, under Domi's oversight, could deliver the program at jumpstart?
Is there an advantage to having?
I guess that's what I'm asking. Is what do we need to envision for this?
The incubators,
the co-starters program, or the co-starters. Because you're taking a package program, co-starters, and that's your Get Started program now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we mix it up a fair amount, but yes. Yeah.
But generally speaking, that's the program. Right. So the question is it an advantage for us to work with you on that program mm-hmm. versus just having, if we're going to have an operations manager of our own, could that person just be trained in the co-starters and we license that, because you license that product, right? Mm-hmm. Could we license that product directly? So that's what we're trying to say is there an advantage to working with you on that program, or is that just something, maybe initially it makes a lot of sense.
But you can get your license for cheaper because I've already paid for mine.
But that's what I'm saying.
Many communities have multiple, in the co-starters universe, communities have multiple co-starters locations. Yeah. And they customize it based on the clientele that they serve, right?
Yeah. And that's what I'm wondering with the differences that we're going to have in terms of what our offering is going to be and the type of clients we're going to have. Is that, does that make sense? But maybe on startup, it doesn't make sense. On startup, we're feeding folks through you.
Right. Well, if you wait for something like a co-starters, it's about business fundamentals, which are universal really across disciplines or even industries. So curriculum is fairly fundamental, right? So I think that.
Can I ask for a little clarity here?
Yes.
Yeah. We're kind of deep into academic speak, which is okay. But just so I can clarify, so are we saying then that future tenants of our incubator will, as a precursor, have to go through a program like this before they're eligible? That's the first I've heard of that.
Heads up on the table for discussion.
Right. Okay. What I was saying was, would they be accepted in the incubator upon condition of having completed a program or starting a program once they're in the incubator? Because part of being in the incubator is building that capacity.
That's on the table for discussion.
Absolutely. Okay. All these things are on the table.
Right.
And that's why I was asking, would this be an in-house person, or it could be an in-house manager, and then we contract with, you know, a group like Domi for that member of our incubator to go be a part of this cohort, or something like that. And just one random thought, it might be interesting to get these folks in a more general group for the general business development and then bring them back into a more high-tech environment for some other, you know, mentoring and things like that. I don't know. But all these things are on the table.
I just wanted to clarify. Yeah. And the second thing is, great presentation, by the way, very good. And but are we seeing this, Domi, for instance, as a source of potential incubator clients upon graduation, or as a source of possible education for our folks, or both?
I would say it's both, because there will be some, as you mentioned before, there will be some of the folks going through that program,
like TCAP,
or even through Get Started, who are manufacturing type businesses, divvy up socks, for example.
It sounds like a lot of his folks, you know, you provide all the education and IT and support, but a lot of your folks come out at the end who are going to continue or looking for space, which is what we're selling.
We're not just selling space.
But the baseline is space and
a unique kind of space.
We don't have the and part. The space leads to the
space,
and.
Space, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. And I would make the incubator contingent on going through some kind of program. Mm-hmm. It can't just be space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You need a level of mentorship and structured, even just for accountability's sake, that people run through a program. So I think it makes sense to get economy at a scale, especially initially, sharing either a position or a program.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that we're both necessarily going to fill two classes side by side with two different facilitators. I also think running a space, that if you had a person whose job was to run the facility, presumably that's also going to be a lot of marketing and pretty high touch with clients and tenants. It's going to be a lot for the person to also facilitate a weekly incubator cohort as a teacher. And maybe if that's all he did. But like Dominic, for example, yes, he does the weekly class, but then he also has a second meeting each week with each company working on strategic planning. You know, that adds up, that amount of time.
He does all the engagement with the company.
Yeah, and then actively refers them to mentors and makes introductions for people. And that's solely, like, Sabrina doesn't, for example, doesn't have to deal with that because she's got over 100 events to deal with about it. You know, I think that that's a lot for one person. There are also different skill sets, too.
Right.
So a person who with deep business experience, like a Dominic, probably has very little interest in running a facility now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to attract that person to that kind of job. They want to be touching the company.
So your other person's running the facility?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was
Sabrina.
It?
Sabrina.
Sabrina.
Yeah. But that would be the analogy, yeah, that's how we do it.
And having a partner, I'm sorry, did I interrupt you? No, I was going to say having a partnership like that, I know most of them are free anyhow, but it can be a more formal relationship to get residents out here in with other events that you host and things like that, just be part of the domain or a community like that, right? Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to say. I think there's value for that cross-pollination, just mm-hmm. building that culture and that community to have not separate, but have at least lots of opportunities if you don't have the classes together, but lots of time for mix.
Yeah, and again, we're not trying to compete. Mm-hmm. And we want to take advantage of, you know, any economies, but we also need to make sure that the service that we provide is convenient for our tenants, to make sure it's something that they want. And one of the advantages that we're going to have is our location relative to, you know, where the technology is being developed. And, you know, so we need to make sure we consider that anyway. Mm-hmm. But again, I think on startup, I think it makes a lot of sense for it to work with you guys on that and just see what kind of demand there really is over time. And
right, test that initially.
Yeah,
sure.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to have different kinds, I'm sorry, we're going to have different kinds of prospective clients. And to Dominic's question, I don't think that necessarily all of them are going to have to go through a program. Some of them may be far enough along. They've done other things or they have a higher level entrepreneurial experience. I think you evaluate all that stuff and decide what they really need on intake. That
that's a good point. Yeah,
an
yeah.
assessment, needs assessment.
Well, that's what exactly was going to say.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yes, that you need a needs assessment, mm-hmm. and then I think that's also helpful seeing where someone starts at, but then following as they progress and you know,
yep.
where things are moving.
Yeah, so the way that we handle that and get started is the first 3 months are a pretty universal experience for every person. And then the second 3 months is much more customized to each person because it's more individual. They meet it on a more individual basis. They don't do the cohort classes anymore. And then they are referred to different mentors, different services as needed, right? So if someone, one thing we're looking at is like, okay, if you go through and get started the first half and then we identify that you're on a business, like a lending track versus like a risk investment track for capital, well, that's two very different groups of people mm-hmm. that you're going to start to be vetted through and meet with, right? So, like, if it's a lending track, well, then we might bring in, like, SBDC, and you start to get some of those services with their consultants and prepare you for that. If it's, like, a risk, then you're going to start meeting with more angel-type people. If that makes sense.
Yep.
So the second half is more customized.
And I think Domi's so good, too.
But that's a lot. It takes a lot of resources to,
yeah,
to deliver that, mm-hmm. the kind of high touch.
And, but not all of your get started clients end up as tenants.
No. Well, so I mean, I would call it our incubator, right? They're in the incubator at that point.
But I mean,
they don't convert to paying a monthly thing later. Not all of them, no.
Okay, because you
not
have
all of them need the space. Either.
But you have co-working space, and then you also, on top of that, you have dedicated.
Offices. Yes.
That people. Mm-hmm.
It's a little separate. So there's people in those offices that aren't even in a program, for example.
They just
want to be in that environment.
And never went through a program.
Right. Not all of them are even entrepreneurs. Some of them are like work for Silicon Valley companies but don't want to work at home.
Hmm. They're in the co-working space.
Yeah.
Okay. But the dedicated offices, any of those not go through a program?
Mm-hmm. Most,
okay. They're later stage, or as you said, not even entrepreneurs.
So if you had like an entrepreneur, you know, retired who wants to license a technology or something, you wouldn't, and they could be in the incubator but not go through the program, right? I mean, is that a good outcome of TCAP, do you think? I mean, do you license, you know, having somebody come in and...
Yeah, I think so. I think that if you could finding the entrepreneurs that are interested in the technology,
or
later stage, like what we've seen with the folks down in Alachua that might want to come back. You know, they're
right.
They
don't need to go through.
They're further down the road. They already have investors. They, you know, they're so okay. So what we're looking at right now, then, if I understand, Lucas, is predominantly what you're offering are a couple of education programs that you could help help with our clients.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if we, so for like a Florida State or FAMU with Get Started, we reserve space in that for them based on the fact that they help us pay for that program, right? So that's how that model works. With TCAP, that's really, I mean, it's an initial pilot phase, but that is something that we're trying to grow with our partners together. Like I said, over time, it may make sense for it to have a primary home of a research park, but we happen to be the ones pushing it so hard right now. But that program needs resources as well. So.
Right. So the last...
And more important than just the it needs financial resources, obviously, but it also needs buy-in so that the universities mm-hmm. just push it more, market it more. I mean, that would be just as valuable as paying for the facilitator. And the way you get them to do that is they pay for it and then they want to market it. So.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Well, I was just going to say, Domi is so good at building the community and the excitement of a startup community. And it's another thing maybe you don't have to duplicate. It may seem like a small thing, but it's not. It takes a lot of time and energy to build that in the community. And I'm just thinking that's another great way that Domi can do that as well.
Yeah, Lucas was really good at that. That was pretty much your job in the family, wasn't it? Getting all that going.
And all those 107 events you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, all mm-hmm. those reasons that people come there and get together.
Yep.
I may be wrong, but I think I remember your first annual report was 135 events.
Yes,
in just about a year. Yeah.
And you just meet so many different people with talents and skills that you never know you might end up collaborating with.
And so that's going to be an important question is, what skill sets do we hire for ourselves and what are we effectively partner to get? Mm-hmm. And so will it make sense to have our own community person, our own operations manager, our own tech people who can handle, because we're going to have some specialized needs with the type of equipment that we're going to need.
Very specialized, yeah.
Whether it's the mm-hmm. lab equipment folks or the makerspace kind of
but
folks.
There's, just not to throw another thing out there, but there are, so the community things and the bigger events where you're getting people together that I do believe there's real value in, as we've proven, that maybe that's also where a partner should make sense mm-hmm. too. You know,
yeah.
There's economy of scale on the community manager side too, and or pitch nights that we've done. Why should?
Yeah.
What if there's a Jumpstart plus mm-hmm. Domi investor pitch night or whatever? You know what I mean? There's things that we shouldn't have to do alone. We should do those too. They're outside of the educational program. Mm-hmm. So.
And not to jump, step on your toes here or anything, but you have had some thoughts about expanding those. Doing different types of pitch nights and things like that.
Yeah, tons of,
ideas. And our tech grant program has been really successful, but I think when we talked a few months ago, that part resonated with me as well, that there is other demand, there are other ways of doing that, there's other ways of connecting those folks with investors that we could all explore in partnership, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pitch is one example.
Right.
So I'm getting ready to launch some better things are happening for me and my company, and the tech grant saved me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a huge, important program.
You all know we have one of our award winners with us from our company. Yeah. And you did list Women's Wednesdays, but that's a program mm-hmm. that Barbara's built to help diversify on that side, and it's been really well received and successful. Mm-hmm. So I think the diversity is really big. All right, good? Yeah? Lucas, mm-hmm. thank you very much.
Thanks.
This is your first meeting with us, but we have been digging deep into different subjects at each of our meetings, and we're making a lot of progress, but we're going to...
Well, if you're
yeah.
My email is Lucas at Domi Station, so if there's any other questions, just ping me, and I'll get back to you within 36 hours.
Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you.
Thank you for your change of leadership, Lucas.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. He works really, really, really hard. So.
I can tell.
Yeah.
See you guys.
He probably thinks a lot in bed at night.
You want to? I just got to say, we're going on to sales and marketing.
No, I got one last slide I wanted to go through on this part of the discussion, just to kind of sum up.
You want me to wait?
Go ahead. No, I'll just grab you for a second. Go ahead. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Again, we've kind of heard, you know, a lot of things that what they're doing, but as we look at all of our partner decisions, we have to keep in mind things like our own brand. Okay, now Domi's great, but Domi's also built a brand, and their brand is what helps drive some of the participation in what they do. So we have to be careful to make sure that we also are able to build our own brand that will drive those folks to us who we're trying to attract. And I mean, that's just going to be a very important consideration. The other are, what are some of the core programs and services that we want to own that's unique to us? Because again, we're saying that yes, the Co-Starters program is sort of, you know, very generic for all businesses, but there will be other things that we're going to want to do. It might be training programs on specific types of equipment, things specifically related to technology commercialization that's maybe a little different, whether it's, you know, some intellectual property maybe, or you know, things like that. The specialized expertise, again, getting back to things like equipment, or maybe it's you know, best practices in lab management, or you know, whatever, things like that. And then we also have to consider, you know, what resources a partner brings versus what's the cost of some of that. So whether we're going after sponsorships and those kind of partnerships, or in the case of Domi, just as I mentioned, the Co-Starters program, for example, that's a program that's available directly from Co-Starters. We don't have to go through Domi to get that, but there could be some advantages on startup to use that, as we've talked about. And then speed. You know, we're wanting to literally jumpstart this thing and get it done and going quickly. Is it quicker to partner with someone, at least on the startup phase, versus us trying to know everything and do everything out of the box? We'll get going faster, I think, if we make some of these partnerships. But you give up in that process. You give up some of the brand considerations. You give up some of the levels of control. So we have to consider that as we look at each of these partnerships. Is there anything else, maybe consideration you guys can think of that we want to make sure we factor in? Okay.
I was just going to pause, because so apologies for having to step out there. You just mentioned brand considerations at the end. I love it when we think alike. We do that often. It's kind of scary. But you're not wrong, Barbara, in what you said at the end there, that Domi's already built a brand and built excitement. There is something about the authority. I mean, we've got to establish this brand as well. And so I am sensitive to that piece. I think that the programs and the events and all of that could be really strong in a partnership, but we're going to have more out here as the years go on, and starting to establish that brand is probably going to be important for us as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, we have somewhat different target markets. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're competing. That's why I asked him, you know, about how many he had applying, and it sounds like he got a lot applying for that Co-Starters program. And it's you know, it's not like we're going to cannibalize anything. We may just end up siphoning off those that are more focused on tech commercialization, mm-hmm. or maybe folks who are at Innovation Park, or people who want to be at the incubator, because there's an advantage if you hold the classes at the incubator that they may be interested in getting into, then they're already in a collaboration environment with folks already in the incubator. So they're more likely to want to be in the incubator if they're taking the classes there. So there are advantages like that that you got to think about, rather than just mm-hmm. partying with Domi and having everybody going to Domi Station for everything. Mm-hmm. So a lot to consider in making these partner decisions.
Or maybe it's a phase thing, like, because since you're wanting to move things quickly, maybe it starts out leaning on Domi a little more, but then it, you know, transitions away.
Absolutely. And I think that could happen with a lot of the stuff we end up doing. But so, again, just to wrap this up, and I think we've already covered most of this, but, you know, I don't know that there are any decisions that we need to make today about how we're going to do this. I think there's a lot to consider here.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think the future advisory board, you know, when we get the organizational structure together and figure out how that's going to work, and then certain management decisions will be, or certain partnership decisions will be made by the manager. So, I mean, you heard what he went through in terms of forming his partnerships with the universities and with, but you can tell just, I mean, the First Commerce and all that stuff. Well, he's out there as the manager making those partnerships. It's not necessarily the board, although I'm sure his core board members are very well connected in the community and they can make those as well. But it's also something that evolves. You don't just kind of go out of the gate and get all your have all your partnerships set. You have to prove that you're actually doing something before many of these folks will step up to the plate and participate.
And they are a startup as well. I mean,
yes.
they've gone through one phase with it, their initial board and everything else, but there are new board members, new it's very different.
I will tell you that, and yeah. I know you've probably seen that too. I mean, there's a learning curve in a lot of the programming they have now, which is awesome. Like, that didn't exist. You know, it takes time to...
Yeah, it didn't exist when they first started.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they pretty much initially started out with space and events. I mean, is that
space
kind of
and events? And again, they have all worked so hard, but they were so busy creating Domi and the startup community, all that stuff. I don't know that they had so much time to focus on the actual some of the actual startups. But that's changed now. Like you heard them talk about, they're working with companies one-on-one. So that's like a huge improvement. But the needs assessment thing, I think, because this is what you're talking about, someone that's, there's some people that aren't going to need to take the Get Started class.
Right.
But the needs assessment, we have to be very careful about who does the needs assessment. Because sometimes, you know, just say at Domi, you don't necessarily have always people that have started businesses before. You know what I mean? Like, they're really great at a lot of things, but they have to be very careful with the needs assessment.
Yeah, and that's something that I think we can formalize. I do have something in the next section about that, so we can talk a little bit more about that. So, any more thoughts on partnerships?
Good. All right.
So.
No, I'm scared of my chair. It has a mind of its own.
Some of them do. Take Reese's chair.
I think. Okay, at the
moment. Well, it gets some adjustments down there that you can
Actually, we have to set up just to keep you awake.
Okay. I'm awake. Catch me. You have another chair back here, too.
Okay. Don't worry. I included this in your packet, these 18 questions or something. And we're not going to have time to go through all of this stuff. I really just hope this would get you thinking about the whole sales and marketing plan. And so what I focused on was this, which for those that have taken any marketing classes, this is the 5 P's of marketing. Okay. It's really a helpful way to think about marketing. So to distinguish marketing from sales, marketing is how we're going to reach the clients. So how do you get your message out? And then I'll talk about sales in a minute. But so the marketing is, you know, what, first of all, is product. In our case, it's mostly services. So what are our services? And our choice about the activities we're going to do, which we've already talked about. We've already got that identified on Lean Business Model Canvas. That's important because that sort of identifies the value that we're going to deliver. The program benefits, we're going to need to have impact tracking because we're going to need that when we go to sponsors and partners to say, here's the impact we're having. And I know Domi has struggled with this initially, and I think they're working hard to do more impact tracking. The brand building component, which we just talked about, and then the decisions about quality. You know, I think I've had this conversation with a lot of folks as we walk through the lab portion and say, well, the lab is going to be more like a garage kind of lab than necessarily the top of the line university lab. That's a quality decision that you have to make because we know from a cost standpoint and from a flexibility standpoint, we're going to need to make that quality decision. Well, that has an impact on the value. Are we going to have necessarily, you know, top drug development activities going on in this garage? I doubt it. I don't know the extent of that. We might be able to do some, but obviously there are going to be some limitations on what we can do as a result of that decision. Now down the road, we get into the next phase building. That, you know, that's a consideration where we can maybe get to the next level.
Will tenants be allowed to make tenant improvements in this garage that they would rent?
And I use the garage basically as a quality thing.
Well, it's going to be basic.
Yeah, very basic. Yes, they will be able to, you know, bring some of their own equipment. They'll be able to maybe make some minor modifications. But a lot of the decisions, though, is that this is not intended to be a long-term thing. So for them to pump money in, you know, and, I mean, that's, they're not going to have a long time to recover the cost of that. But
in some ways, it's necessary to do that even to get started. So
yeah, well, I mean, again, that will be have to be something we'll have to evaluate before they're admitted as
individually, one-on-one,
and the needs assessment is, and that's what we need. We're trying to make space as flexible as possible. The lab, I would say, is going to be harder to do any kind of customizing. The open spaces, you know, we may have more flexibility in allowing some customizing to go on in there. It's just a matter of, are they permanent fixtures or changes, or part of it may be you have to remove it when you leave, you know, whatever it is.
Or you can't remove it.
You know, it's just, you know, we have to probably evaluate.
Some of the basic things would be electrical and plumbing, things like that, to set stuff up. Those are the nature of things that simply can't be removed.
Right. And we're trying to, when we're looking at the design, we're trying to look at making that part as flexible as possible. So we have overhead power, for example. We have overhead water supply. The sewer portion is going to be a little harder, but yeah, we're trying to think through a lot of that, and then the nature of whatever wall system or fencing or whatever we do, we'll play into that. But again, that's the idea behind the design, is to try to make it as flexible as possible. But if somebody gets into, and then also the power, you know, hopefully we can put enough power in there that aside from the drops, there's sufficient power to be able to do whatever somebody needs to do. But ventilation, you know, maybe some specific ventilation requirements or other things that might require some minor modifications that we'll have to consider, and who's going to pay for it and what happens when they leave. This is not intended to be a long-term thing. That's going to drive the cost and time. You know, that'll drive a lot of those decisions. And then, how we're going to price this. Obviously, that plays into the marketing piece, the rental rates. Program fees. You heard him saying that, you know, they don't charge students, but they do charge others $400. We'll have to make decisions about program fees. And will we be able to develop similar partnerships with the universities that will allow for that kind of arrangement? The rental rates, we have some preliminary information on, you know, what kind of lab rates exist. I think the other spaces, I think that's going to be a little more open to what the market says about, you know, whether it's a warehouse space, but then we also have to build in some fee related to the program we're going to get. So we'll have to make decisions about, do we go separate rates for rent versus programs, or do we have a bundled rate, you know, for some people who are going to get both. We'll have to make some of those decisions as well. The place decision, usually this is about distribution, but in our case, it's about where we're delivering this. You heard mentioned in their case, they have somebody from Atlanta who Skypes in. That's not uncommon, actually. Coming from Atlanta is a little unusual, I think, to Tallahassee, but you heard why. You can have tenants, you can have co-working space. Does everybody understand what co-working space is? It's, you know, basically it's community space. You pay a fee, you take whatever desk is available when you come in, right?
First come, first serve.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And then there's an affiliate program, which are, those are folks that maybe participate in the programs but don't actually have any space in the facility. It might be, you know, maybe it's somebody who comes through the TCAT program and says, I want access to this particular training or these particular resources that I don't see in my daily life, but I don't necessarily need to rent space at this point in what I'm developing. Maybe it's just very early stage.
I'm sorry, we got to play it?
No, yeah, okay. Go ahead.
So I just can't remember the surveys if you asked the specific question, but it just occurred to me that I'll think about Henry and Pamela doing needing the makerspace. A lot of them talked about having secure locations so that they can kind of control their own desk, their own space, lock their cabinet, whatever it might be. I just wonder if someone like that may want their own desk in the makerspace, but be perfectly happy having a co-working space to do the general business out in like a bullpen area, right? Or, you know, someplace more open like Domi. There might be a lot of different arrangements with this group since they're mostly looking for that equipment use in that type of space. Is that, am I on the right track with that? Mm-hmm. So it might need to be a menu of things like you're talking. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we'll have to keep that in mind in the facility design as well, so that you can have that. And I could see, and you saw in the pictures of Domi, most of the pictures were of the co-working space in the middle, and then they had the big warehouse sliding doors. Those were the individual offices. And I could see something similar in terms of engineering space. You could have maybe it's just individual benches and first come, first serve, and you know, sort of an engineering or co-working space. And with that, you would have access to the common equipment for a fee.
You'd have like lockers or something.
Yeah, you could have right. You could have lockers to store their own tools or products or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Working papers, all that stuff.
Yeah. So, and then the promotion, this is the typical promotion stuff, advertising, etc. And so, again, we'll have to make decisions about that.
Make sure you list social media. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how did I get left off?
I said direct mail, and I still get mail. I cringe.
Yeah, direct mail, we still do that, right?
Yeah.
I think I copied that list from somewhere. Not the whole list, just the promotion list. But, and then the people. And, this again goes to what we just talked about, which is we have to choose. Are we going to use somebody else's people? Are we going to use our own people? Are we going to set the standards for the quality of people that we're going to use? What's their level of technical sophistication? We'll have to, when we make those hiring decisions and pay decisions, we'll have to factor that in. So.
Quick question on that. This question's been on my mind for a little while. We keep talking about people who have a lot of knowledge over the tech, the particular area, whether it's the labs or the makers, whatever it might be, to maintain that equipment. Is that something that a grad student could do part-time? If there was a facilities manager, I just don't know how many. If we're going to get one person who's going to know all these different spaces, but is that an option to consider in the future? Someone who benefits from the space themselves, but is hired also to kind of maintain a portion or a part-time or something? Or?
You would depend on the skill level.
Well, of course, finding the right person, but it's possible to consider?
Again, the type of equipment, how sensitive or specialized it is, sometimes you have to take classes from the vendor, the manufacturer, in order to be able to adequately support the equipment.
And then you have to have maintenance contracts to maintain all that stuff.
And it's possible to get, but you'd want them to stick around a while.
Right, that would be the person who would have to be in-house. Okay. Yeah. I just wasn't sure.
It might be easier, I think, on the makerspace side of things with that kind of equipment. Because, I would guess the College of Engineering probably trains folks on most of the kinds of equipment that we're looking at.
I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just wondering about options to arrange.
No, that's a good option, I think, for some of that.
And a grad student who was working there but also needed a part-time job. I mean that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Domi, for example, they have interns as well. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any other thoughts on the sales and marketing plan? Anything I'm missing here? Obviously, again, a lot of details going to have to go into that, the final plan, but what we're trying to get to at this point is this first pass, and then we'll talk about next steps. So one of those steps is going to be building a financial model and taking a shot at, what the budget might look like for some of the things that we need to do. So on the sales side, the question is, how will we get, keep, and grow clients? So, you know, the marketing side is, you know, how do we reach them so they know about us? And is it something that they perceive a value to and that they're willing to take the next step? And then the sales plan is, you know, for new clients, it's how do we identify who those prospects are and then take them through a process. It might be providing pre-incubation services, as we talked about. Maybe it's they're not ready yet, and whether it's going through our EEP program or going through Domi's Get Started or one of those, that might be a necessary step that leads them to becoming a full-blown incubator client. And then the client needs assessment and program matching. So we'll have to have a formalized process to do that assessment, to figure out what programs they need to be in, whether it's the pre-incubation or matching them to co-starters, or maybe they're not even ready for that. You know, maybe they just, maybe they got more work to do to even get into the next step, but that'll be part of that assessment. And then formalizing what our program entry criteria is, and then evaluating them against that, and then as well as what their potential is, and an evaluation of what their fit is within the incubator. Just because they're a business ready to get started doesn't mean they're the right fit. So you also do things like, you know, is the entrepreneur coachable? I mean, that's one simple criteria. Sometimes there'll be a great idea, or maybe not so great, but it could be great. But the lead entrepreneur is just absolutely not coachable, in which case we really have nothing to offer other than space if they're not coachable. So we're not necessarily going to take that. That's one example of fit. And so we'll have to include that in those criteria. And then for existing clients, again, how do we sell? Well, we help promote those existing clients in the community, which leads to their own comfort level with the incubator. They're going to stick with us longer. You know, they again continue to see the value in the engagement process. They're getting that feedback, as he mentioned, as you mentioned, that Domi wasn't doing that. They weren't having that level of engagement with the entrepreneur and coaching them and move along. Now they are. They get that.
Well, no, just because they were so busy building everything.
No, exactly. Yeah. But yeah. The tenants or the clients of the incubator, like you, see more value the more coaching and engagement that you get. So that's what the point is to this, is that engagement process is really about selling as well. Okay, because we're constantly demonstrating the value. And through that process, we're going to get that client feedback and continually, and I think one of our E's was evaluation in our program objectives. That is going to be essential to maintaining those clients, is to make sure we're constantly looking at those programs and make sure that they're delivering what we want them to deliver and that the clients are getting value out of that.
And I think that's hugely important.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you just keep doing things and you don't even know if they're working or not.
Right.
The people that you're doing it for.
Yep. And then the exit criteria, monitoring, planning, communications. Again, the intent is not for these folks to stay forever. So we have to have the exit criteria. So when you get to this point, you got to leave. We have to, in that engagement process, we have to make sure they get it. They're planning for it. We're looking ahead, because you can't just show up one day and say, sorry, you got to leave tomorrow. You know, so we have to give an opportunity to make sure they're planning, and we're constantly communicating what the next benchmark is or time frame or whatever.
Just one of the things you might think about there is also when these companies come in to incubate, like especially the wet lab guys, about setting out agreed to milestones that they hit, because if they're not making their milestones, you might as well tell them to leave, you know, because they're just taking up space and they're not getting anywhere.
But how do you really know that?
Well, I know they do that over at Sid Martin.
Yeah.
They put milestones together that you have to achieve, and if you don't achieve those milestones, they'll ask you to leave.
Right.
Because you're using up valuable space and time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you're not hitting the milestones, you're not progressing.
That's right. You're not making progress. So you have to have, maybe you have to have a committee that evaluates that and says, you know, are they really making progress, or do they just have
not have the right milestones or what's going on.
And that's usually where an advisory board will come in, and they'll provide the entry and exit evaluations and help make those decisions. It's not usually one person that does
right,
that.
Right.
Because usually
you have like an advisory board.
Yeah. It can be too complex for one person doesn't necessarily have all the experience to make that kind of decision. But,
so just on that point, yes, okay. Thank you.
Were you gonna say something? I wanted to hear.
I don't know. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
We'll wrap this up. Thank
all
you.
Right.
Yes. So I guess all along I thought we were also talking about and the needs assessment is part of this, but it's not just a needs assessment on the skill set of a brand new startup company, but we've been talking to people who've been at Sid Martin for a while that want to move companies back. They've had a lot of programs for a long time, right? So is there the same kind of graduation? I mean, not all of this seems to fit with someone who has been at Sid Martin for a while and needs their business to grow in Leon, Tallahassee, and doesn't have any other facility in this community. And that's where I'm leading, is if we have a requirement to meet those benchmarks and to move out, there's a piece here that makes me a little uncomfortable because there are no other facilities in this community for them to go to. And then we may lose those businesses in this community. I mean, that's part of what we want to do long term. We want to have those second stage companies have different facilities. But does that piece fit into this conversation? Or for our purposes now, we're just talking about straight up incubating, and that's the program, and this is typical, and all that other stuff will come as the demand increases.
I think you sort of got to walk before you run. And we're taking on some huge bites right now. Major commitments of resources of people and energy and effort and planning and dollars and before we go to that step, I'd rather get this one right. I hear where you're saying you gotta have an end game out there.
But what if our first few clients are in that second category already? Is that just another track that we need to be thinking about, because it keeps coming up and most of this seems like it's for those true startups.
Well, and there's the concept of anchor
tenant. And you're not wrong, huh?
There's a concept of anchor tenant.
Yeah.
The anchor tenant falls outside of the other criteria. They're there because they're paying rent. And they're contributing, their expertise in that environment because they're able to collaborate with other newer folks coming in. There may be some value into having them longer term.
Just a thought, straight around. This is kind of a late conversation at this point. It struck me we're kind of reasonably far down the road to be wondering who we're going to be when we grow up. But it's critical. I think, is this the body that will decide this, or we advise this to another body? I'm not sure, but everything we've done to this point and on is totally contingent on whether we're incubator only,
yeah,
or a mixed facility or not, because everything else is a branch of that decision. So if we haven't made that yet, we're kind of got the cart, for the horse. I mean, so that, I would table that. Let's decide who we are. Because the building design, building structure, our timeline, our acceptance criteria, our graduation criteria, any number of things we talked about for four meetings is completely dependent on what the answer to that question is.
Or you can take it as we've been building the information to get us to the point to make that decision.
Okay.
And that's what we've been trying to do. But you're right. We got to make recommendations.
Practical standpoint, it seems to me like your first obligation is to fill this thing or pretty close to it. And we don't know right now who those people or companies would be. And so once that happens, it seems like you could then take a lay of the land and see how you move on from there. And maybe you start off with a mixture of really, really early startups and some more established companies. And you'll be fine for a while, but you don't know what your demand will be down the road for that. But the most important thing is to try and keep the thing filled up. And so if you get a lot of demand for earlier stage companies, then perhaps you can start leaning on the people who have been there, who are more established, to find a little space. relieve some space, and so that these new this new cohort can come in. So I think economics ultimately drives this. The first thing you need to do is make sure this thing's well used.
And the exit criteria typically is not hard and fast, and it's not necessarily the same for all kinds of clients. And I do think we will have at least one or two anchor tenants who help pay the bills and provide a level of certainty.
I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm just mentioning it for clarity because we said two different things right here at the same time. You know, we said we're going to be really picky about who goes in here. And we're going to choose them wisely because we want to be able to succeed and all that. But by the same time, we're talking anchor clients and we're talking guys that are going to pay the rent. You know, I'm from the military. You know, we design, you can design an airplane to do one thing and it does it really well. We also, a lot of times, because of compromise, design airplanes to do a lot of things and they do a lot of things mediocrely. So that's
I don't
a decision.
Want to hear that about your airplane.
You never want to fly the A model. It's the truth.
So we bring in people from the community, start building the community, so we can see who is a part of that community.
And I agree with you. We want to fill it up, but we cannot. I don't think if we're actually going to make any kind of real progress, you know. Sacrifice good for perfect in the beginning. We need to decide. And we can always change our color of our wagon 2 years down the road, but we got to build to the first iteration. Whatever we decide that to be.
Sort of what Domi has done in a slightly different context.
Yeah.
With one caveat that'll come at the end of the discussion here, depending on the type of funding we seek, there may be certain requirements to keep the facility as, you know, if we apply for the EDA. For a particular grant, this is what we were hearing, then not to jump ahead, but if we say it's only for startups, well, there may be some requirements to only keep it for startups for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I have always leaned towards the anchor tenants and others to both fill it, but also because there's a need there, and this is just the first building of hopefully, you know, one or two others that could take them. And after our conversation on Friday, I see you looking at the clock. I know we got more to get through.
I'm always looking at the clock.
I know you are. But I think it may be in our interest, both recognizing the demand we have right now, the need to fill it, but then also a longer-term commitment to have it open to anchor and startups so we have that flexibility going forward. Yeah.
I think the analogy I would use is product mix. I mean, sometimes, you know, you have multiple products and you have that mix for a reason. In our case, I think we'll start out with a certain mix that we have to have, but that mix could change over time. So,
is that?
I got it.
But you're not wrong, yeah.
I just think that we're still a little nebulous on what we're envisioning here, and I think that really, really drills down into the follow-on organization and, more specifically, what we're going to do with this building. I mean, we have to have it. You know, we can talk about the mix all day long, but we have to define what we think the mix would be if we're going to go forward with concrete steps in the future. You know, that's all my point is. Yeah. Now, you got 16 minutes, so.
Yeah, this is not a short conversation. I'm going to jump in here for you real quick.
Sorry, but
we originally came up with I came up with Jumpstart. I don't know why, I just did. I wanted to call this committee something. I'm not married to the name Jumpstart. We did go out and look at some potential names. Jumpstart is actually used quite widely on a number of different things. It's used quite frequently in business incubation. So I don't know how you feel about this, but what I would say is this is something you guys can do on your own if you want, maybe a little exercise to think of some names. We can do the legwork, research, whatever, but just throw some names back to us and let us go look at it. It's just, you know, Domi, as you can see what Domi did, is they went to, what was that, Latin or something? And which Latin usually, you know, you're safer with, right? Because anyway,
it worked.
Unless you went to
Catholic school. Will you send us this slide just to give everyone kind of a
yes?
Okay,
we can do.
Is that good?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Is there any need to or desire to pull in April a little bit? She's a board member. April Salter, yes, she owns her own company. just bounce this idea off her. She might be interested in thinking through this a little bit.
Yep.
Okay.
We could also have an event. They brought people in and give names.
What was you thinking on 12C?
12C.
That's I2C.
I2C.
Innovation to commercialization.
I'm sorry. About 12C, all right.
But good call if it be 12C. People be looking for a building 12C. Yeah. That's okay.
I had to put my glasses on to see how it goes. And go ahead, you want to do this one?
Sure. We've got our landing page finally set up on the website so that people can see it, because we have been getting a lot of traction. The landing page is going to continue to be updated as we get more solid information regarding it, layouts and everything. So if you have anybody who wants to actually view it or anything, it's... It's on the website, it's under IP Community, there's a Jumpstart tab, or the URL right there.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Do we have a link to it on the homepage?
Yes.
Okay.
And this is not something just for internal review right now.
No,
it is up there for anyone to...
We had a lot of people who were asking about it, interested in it, and we didn't have it on the website, so it was really... crucial to put it up there.
That's perfect, yeah.
And I think this is pretty much what we had on the press release that we did. Yeah.
And what the Democrats did.
Yeah,
well,
what they
put everything together.
Good.
And OEV also asked for something that they could point to so that when they're talking about it, they can go and look here. I thought you looked here, though. So.
Yes, Dave, we still have a few minutes.
So, Mary Jo, did you want to talk about the architectural engineering stuff?
You can talk about it.
Okay. We met with Cam Whitlock from Lewis and Whitlock last week. And he is going to put together a proposal for doing the architectural and engineering study that we discussed in the last meeting. Cam has a continuing service agreement with the county, and as a result, we don't have to go through an RFP process. They've already done that for us. Basically, we can choose from any that we wanted that's under that continuing service agreement. All the rates are the same, so we'll get his proposal back and look at it and see that it makes sense, and then we'll go ahead and get a contract ready to go and get him under contract so he can get moving, assuming the proposal comes back and looks reasonable. We already have some money budgeted to do this, so I can do that under that authority. I don't have to go back to the board to get it done. The chair can just sign off on the contract, I think, and we can move forward from there. He is telling us that it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks to turn around, so after we get the contract done. But also, just a little background, if you didn't notice, his name was actually listed on Dummy Stations as one of their partners that he did that. He's working on the, Wendy just told me he did the Jim Rand's building downtown. So he's very familiar with this kind of project, and maybe not necessarily the lab space, but he can bring in expertise as he needs it, and subcontract that's permitted under the agreement. Anyway, he was very receptive. He was very, very eager to do this kind of work. He's a very community-minded person. So, anyway, we'll get that thing moving.
When do you expect the contract? Did I miss that?
I don't have a date. We'll hopefully get the proposal by the end of this week.
Okay.
And then it'll probably be next week, the earliest, before I can get the contract done, once I see the proposal. But I'm going to try to get with Melissa Van Sickle, our counsel, and go ahead and see if she can draft something down and dirty, because we can actually reference the county's contract and just, you know, say here's who the contracting parties are and just substitute names and stuff, and hopefully you just incorporate all their stuff by reference, because it has to be identical anyway, so might as well just incorporate it by reference. And so I think we can probably get something up pretty quickly. Won't be a lot of review required. Any other questions? So
again, it's a piece of the puzzle we're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all coming together here. Yeah.
And this first step is really just about the in the suitability of the building before we even get into the design itself, right? I mean, that's what we're looking at.
Just the assessment.
What's there? Okay.
Some concepts.
Yep.
Any surprises or anything to announce about the tenant that's in there now and their exit plan?
Any surprises?
Because it's been so quiet now for a little while.
I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, you have a date.
I'm still waiting. I'll call into our council to get more clarification as to the agreement that we have with them and where that agreement stands. So we both executed an agreement that said they would have all their belongings out by December 15th, okay, and in containers that are in the back of the property. That's six containers back there. But the idea being that if they then didn't have those containers removed by February 15th, that we could just have those hauled to the dump. How that works practically, I don't know. But
this space is...
They have it 90%. There's still a lot of chemicals. There's a lot of small stuff, trash. There's repair work that needs to be done.
Does that have any impact on the assessment from a...
I don't think so. The good news is they can at least move around in the space that they couldn't move before. I mean, it was just so packed with stuff. Okay. I think it's going to be okay as far as doing the assessment things. I mean, they can see where things are at. They can see how the hoods are connected and all that stuff. So, anyway, so we're still working with council to get through this.
Is there intention to... Let me ask you this way. The chemicals and such is just for disposal, is that right?
Yes.
And is there intention to contract with someone to take it out? Or can we have EH&S from FSU, for example, go out there and do it and build them?
We would not likely collect anything at this point, so we're trying to work through the contract. I think he's trying to find the appropriate way to handle it. And that's what I have to talk to council about and see what the next steps are. The problem is, I don't know that agreement has been approved by the courts yet. Mm-hmm. So we hit the holidays, and everything kind of came to a standstill. So that's what we're trying to work through.
If it was left to us in the end, and they never got it done, then we might need to rely on some expertise. And if you all provide those services for fee, they may be looking for someone. I don't know.
You probably have to outside vendors.
The question is because it's an Innovation Park building, whether there might be some mechanism to do that. I don't know.
This building is not in your master plan.
Yeah,
it cuts it's off at Schlager.
It's not there.
Yeah. It's not designated.
But we'll figure something out eventually. Yep. So I think there's also scuttlebutt that maybe they're maybe coming to some resolution, some settlement of their lawsuits and all of that, but it's just scuttlebutt at this point.
But some in that group are starting an accelerator too with wet lab space, or is that irrelevant?
Some in that group have a lot of different ideas about other things they're working on right now. We have no idea about the status of any of them.
So, I have heard an accelerator with a wet lab. I guess you have too.
Yeah, and we've heard that.
Okay.
But again, it's at this point, it's just...
Well, that would be somewhere else, right?
Yes.
So they can do anything they want, who cares?
Yes. Somewhere else, private, other investors, it's completely different.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, if that would happen at some point in the future, that would be of interest, but anyone can do anything, and we are positioning ourselves as having something that nobody else has in an environment that nobody else can duplicate. You can't create Innovation Park someplace else. You can't have access to the university resources that we're going to have access to necessarily. So I'm not as concerned about that as...
I will say there's a CRA meeting on the 26th. There was some question about that project looking for some of the arts money.
Arts money?
I'm sorry. In full disclosure, Mary Jo is working on Lemoyne's side of that. There's some discussion about that, but it's all wrapped up in that. And so there may or may not be some information out on January 26th. So I kind of doubt it, but just...
There's a lot of people looking for that art.
There's a lot of people looking for that.
The art of science.
Yeah, look at the statues on that one.
Yeah.
Good luck.
So, good on that one?
Yep.
For architects? Yeah. Anything else, Major?
No.
Good? Okay.
I'm fine.
EDA?
Yeah. You want to take that?
You set up the meeting, but it's really good. So, we have a Florida rep. Greg Bidet, right, who has connections
FSU
at
grad.
School at FSU. And over a couple of days, he met with some local economic development folks. I've been appointed to the Appalachian Regional Planning Council and the statewide board for the Florida Planning Council Associations. Mm-hmm. That's going to have some economic development components and more regional focus, which will be good. He presented to our board, met with a group of DOMIs, some of you might have been there, and then he had a one-on-one with Ron and I out here, which seemed to go very well. So we, quite frankly, I think in his two-day visit, and he said he's trying to visit a lot of places around the state to drill down and meet one-on-one. He is attached to the Atlanta regional office, but he is dedicated to Florida, and he's getting a handle on everything, but I think by the time he showed up here, he had a certain lay of the land, and then we were just really lucky to get that time to explain what's happening in Innovation Park and specifically Jump Start. Is that a fair intro for you?
Yes, absolutely.
And as much as I drove around crazy and diverting into the bigger picture and trying to connect what he had heard over the last 2 days with what he sees out here, we tag team well. You got all the details out, right?
Yeah, he was on a really tight time.
He was on a tight. And he went to TCC.
Yeah, he went to TCC next, and then he left his briefcase here, and he drove. And then he thought he left it at Domi, and he drove over there, and he had to come back here. And so he was still a half an hour late. I got him out 4 minutes late.
You got him out on with a tour of the building,
took him over to the Collins Building, walked him through there.
Yes.
He was very impressed with the work that we've done so far in terms of the feasibility study and the conversations that we had. And I agree with you, there's a lack of some clarity, but we also have answers to a lot of questions that he's interested in. They have some very specific requirements for incubators in terms of funding construction of incubators. Mm-hmm. And so he has provided that. It's a one-pager. And so when we get ready to go and ask for funding, which, by the way, the last thing I asked him as he was getting in his car was, so what do you think? Is this a project that you think EDA might fund? And he said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And you were very clear before, because I missed that intentionally, let you take that part of the tour without me. If we applied for this facility, it does not preclude us from applying for facilities in the future for additional funding. So that is a very good thing. It's not a one-off or anything like that. And we did get the sense that, I mean, it could be relatively soon, in the next 6 months or something, that we might be ready to put in an application to the EDA.
There's a match requirement.
Yes.
So,
but could be in kind, though.
Yes. But they will fund construction and, in some cases, non-construction. I asked them specifically about equipment because we are going to have some pretty high equipment costs. He said they don't typically do equipment because it's a little hard to keep track of. They got to do UCC filings on each piece, and it just gets a little nasty. Mm-hmm. So they prefer to do facilities because they can just do, one single lien on that property. And But
is this property lienable? That's a good question.
It is. I think there's a way to get it done. You can't technically lien it because it's state property. But
there's requirements for the organization to pay back the dollars if you don't meet the terms of the grant. And things like that. That's what we kind of got into. So it may not even come back to the property. It may be that the organization, that LCRDA, would have to pay back if we sold the building.
I've had the same thought, and we'll get there on that question. But
they work with lots of public sector people.
Matter of fact, there's a requirement. The requirement is that basically a public sector entity has to own the building.
Yeah.
So, it's not private sector funding.
Is this part of Small Business Administration?
It's Department of Commerce, Economic Development Administration.
Yeah. From the feds.
Feds.
Feds, yeah.
Eric, didn't we apply for one?
That's what I was wondering.
Before?
We did.
Now, they have a variety of different programs. That was a niche program. This is presumably...
Yeah, that was a regional innovation strategies program that we applied for. This is actually, I believe, a different program.
But essentially the same organization.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, two things on the political side. One, these programs have great track record, great monitoring, and I've talked to a few others because I'm working on another project, and I don't get the sense that this... EDA programs are going to be a special target or anything for change in the near future. Yeah. So that may give some comfort, but there may be some other changes. We have to watch that. But these programs may continue without much change.
The whole innovation concept, from everything I've read in new administration, that is up their alley.
It's probably going to,
So my recollection of those of that really grant program, there was plenty of money available in terms of the amount of the award to do what needed to be done. So it sounds like you get a significant amount of money for this type of person, which is something real. I mean, this is construction. This is to establish the entity. So it would seem like there should be.
I can't remember the number. It's somewhere between $1 and $3 million, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, some program grants or planning grants, Gulf Coast, the Restore Act group, those counties just got a few $100 for economic development planning over in West Florida, so they do even some programming or economic development type stuff. I think there was one grant in Gainesville, maybe $8 and $13 million in my mind. That was well above what they normally get. That was a special circumstance with some other monies cobbled together. It was the
building for the innovation hub.
But. Right. But yes, typically, and I saw some of these sites in Chicago and other places that got, you know, this kind of investment, so this was great feedback.
Yep. And the good news is he will be our resource going forward, so that when we're putting the application together, we can run it by him, and he can look at it and go, well, you need this, or this doesn't read right, or whatever. He won't do it for us, but he'll review it and give us feedback before we submit. And the other good news is they've changed the program. Now they take it on a rolling basis, applications on a rolling basis.
Which is huge.
So in the past, we had to hit a deadline. Mm-hmm. We weren't ready, and we just had to put something together. And so that's encouraging. He did say, though, that it's best if you get your applications in before the fourth quarter, early third quarter, because by then they've spent their money or committed their money, and then you got to wait till the next.
The calendar quarter?
Fiscal
quarter. Yeah,
they're September 30th, us.
So
it is by July
1.
Which I want to say is actually doable, even with all the questions that's out there. It is doable this year. The other political side of this is Appalachian Regional and economic development in our area. There's a report called CDS, SEDS report. They're in revision right now. Leon's got take a stronger role in partnerships in that if we want to boost our competitiveness. We have not been very competitive in the past in this area. WEI, Foucault Institute, is the primary EDA project that's going right now. So I think there's some stuff happening locally that can boost our competitiveness as well. Why I really wanted to be on that board. Just, so I can hassle other people, not just y'all. We are working on a project with Leon County, multiple partners between us, Orange, Space Coast, others, that have gotten us connected to the staff in D.C. So we've got people who are really understanding our region right now more than they ever have. So this is a good time to think about this.
Absolutely.
Good?
Yep. Well, the other thing is we kind of did the deep dive with Greg, just like I did with the other, for the board orientation I've done for some of you, which really explains what all is in the park. And he was like, wow, I had no idea. And he went to school here. He graduated like 94. So before a lot of the stuff had really evolved, he knew about the Mag Lab, but the rest of it's a little fuzzy. But he was really impressed with what all was here and what that means for this incubator. That's all I know about that.
Okay. So, good. Any questions on that? Does that feel like a...
It's a good development.
Good development for us, yes. Okay. So next steps, new business, and adjourn real quickly. But next steps, back to Thomas' true point earlier, we've got a ton of information now. We've got architects moving forward, other things like that.
Ron, you and I talked last week about the LCRDA board meeting, which is on February 2nd. What is their ask? We meet every 2 months as a board, delegation to executive. We probably don't have time to dig into this, and you and I were going to talk about this more, but I guess my question to you is, are we at a point, I know there are other components here, but are we at a point where we've all been digging in a lot, could we have kind of a summary meeting and start to brainstorm as a group and flesh out some of these choices? Or I know that may not be right nearly in business model. We got a couple of pieces.
Well,
I'm just curious.
I don't think we're there yet.
Okay.
I think, to Tom's point, I think there's still a lot we've got to kind of, we need to put some of this meat on the bone.
The architecturals, other things.
Yeah.
I'm great with that. I just wanted to toss the question out. Okay.
Yeah, my opinion is let's wait. Let's get some more information in. Let's put some meat on the bone with what we are, the information we've already collected. The lean business model is fine. I'm still old school, and I still like seeing a business plan. But
yeah,
because I think that's where you put some of the meat on the bone to talk about things. Yeah, this has been a good communication tool with the lean business model. But I still think to talk about things like, you know, target sectors and mm-hmm. things like that, you just can't really address all of it in there. But we also then can do the financial model and say, you know, based on the general concept of what that facility is going to look like, we can have this kind of leasable space. And once we know the leasable space and we have these, you know, so we throw all of those details on a spreadsheet, and at least we have something to look at to say, is this financial model sustainable? Can we be self-sustaining with this financial model? But without that, I think it's still kind of nebulous. I agree 100%. So I'd like to wait until I can put some of that together and not have to scramble to a pre-scheduled meeting.
I'm 100% with you. I think everybody's nodding around the table. Mm-hmm. That's good. Just wanted to frame it so we all are on the same page.
And that kind of fits actually with where we're at on the lean business model, which is on the revenue expense side, and then the organization side, which I still got to get Melissa on formalizing that, the nonprofit. But I would say if there's anything to continue to think about, Don, I know you were going to champion this, and we can talk more, but, you know, organizational considerations, how that might look. Because, you know, we've also talked about staffing and, you know, all those considerations. And it's still pie in the sky at this point, but at least to have some sense of direction that where we might go with that organization, at least an option.
Mm-hmm. And our brainstorming homework for names. You wake up in the middle of the night, have a notepad next to you because you're going to come up with a name for this or something. Or you're going to say, man, Denise and Ron just nailed it. I love number 3 or something. 12C right now.
12C.
Yeah.
12C. I've had a hard time with that.
Yeah, that's all right. Ryan, put on his glasses. You're not that. Yeah. We're good?
Yep.
When is our next scheduled meeting?
We actually don't have one.
That's
right.
I'm just looking at it.
Yeah. So we need to give a little time to let some of this process, maybe later February, mid-late February is what we're going to be looking at?
Yeah. Let me see where we're at before I say.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
We're still looking, you know, at least 2 months before we get anything back
on
the architectural side.
Yeah.
And that will give me time to hopefully, like I said, put a document together that maybe more formally addresses some of the stuff we've been talking about.
So this may be a little more of a gap between our meetings, but, I mean, I guess maybe we've said it every time, maybe I haven't said it in a couple months. Thank you all. This is exactly what we wanted to do. I mean, it's been 4 months, and maybe 3 and a half months. We've been pushing through a tremendous amount of material. Mm-hmm. You all have helped us do exactly what we needed to do to get us to this point, and this is the big step to kind of assimilate all this into one of Ron's master spreadsheets. So stay tuned with that.
Yeah.
Good?
Good.
Okay.
Good meeting.
Thank you all.
Ron.
Yes.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Oops, sorry.
It's
those chairs again.
Crazy chair.